Let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
What's up, everybody? I'm Kevin.
And I am John.
And you're listening to the 6 Degrees of Schwarzenegger podcast, where we are taking a long, hard look at some of our favorite action movies from the era of Arnold.
Now, Schwarzenegger is the icon of the genre, and we're taking a deep dive into some of our favorite 80s and 90s cult action movies and breaking them all the way down.
I feel like this whole movie is a deep dive. We're like, we're episode 3 of Total Recall right now.
I'm exhausted and we haven't even started yet.
We haven't scratched the surface of what's really going on.
No.
Apparently.
No.
Who knows? I don't know that we ever figure out what's really going on in this movie. It's just deep like
it's
that.
It's sort of like Inception.
Yeah. How it's a dream within a dream.
That's right. How deep does the rabbit hole go?
Exactly. There's also a lot of Matrix stuff in there, including what we just saw, which was him popping that bug out of himself in a gruesome fashion.
Very interesting. I wonder if the Wachowski Once Upon a Time brothers took some cues from some Total Recall.
That's definitely could
very
have.
Interesting, because there's more than one similar
things that are very much referenced, which we'll get to as we go and we'll point them out.
Don't ruin it.
So we've got the last episode ended with one version of Arnold named Hauser telling the main version of Arnold named Quaid to get your ass to Mars.
Everybody got that? You've followed along.
Arnold told Arnold to go to Mars.
He found a suitcase full of cool spy shit, which is like every 12-year-old boy / me and you dream.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that'd be so cool. Indeed. And to suddenly know karate or whatever fighting style Arnold knows. Not karate. He's a brawler.
But so this section picks up with the shuttle arriving on Mars, and
which proves once again that models look better.
Yeah, it looked great.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
It super good.
We see a plus size woman coming off, like just a large Arnold sized woman coming off the shuttle.
Alert.
She's passing through customs here. Now
it does look like a very stressful customs environment. I will say I was looking at it going, I feel stressed just looking at that line.
Yes. She does not have like the quick pass or the, she's not TSA pre-checked.
No, she doesn't have global entry or intergalactic entry.
Interesting thing. The woman's passport identifies her as Priscilla Allen, which is the name of the actress.
There you go.
So that's cool, I guess.
I thought
for her.
Could remember.
Yeah, maybe.
I
don't know. Then we also see in the same moment, like Richter and his goons are walking through with some military personnel.
That's right.
There's Quado graffiti in the airport, I guess
Martians
you'd call it.
Love Quado.
Yeah.
they think he's fucking George Washington.
And they're like, let's kill him. Cool, dudes. Cool. Very cool.
Yeah, so they're being ushered out by the military. And it's at that point that the customs officer.
He's asking, how long are you here? 2 weeks. Okay. He's like, what? Did you have any fruit or vegetables?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. He's like, excuse me. And then she starts having a meltdown. Her face is.
Priscilla Allen goes for it.
Big time.
I don't know what they said, ma'am, are you willing
She's
to just,
seizing.
Are you willing to, I don't know, pull your face apart?
It's basically, I think she told him, flash a strobe light in my face, trigger a seizure. But yeah, she is like twitching. She's shaking. She's like pulling her mouth in all sorts of weird ways.
It looks like she's going to pull like her skin off of her skull.
Yeah. So
which draws attention, which Richter hears.
Do you think... Yeah, right. Richter notices. He realizes that it's Quaid.
Immediately.
Yeah. I mean, who knows what it is, but he's quite right, obviously.
Yeah.
They sort of surround the woman.
The perpetrator. Yeah.
Then he sort of, a wig falls off. He pops a button or something on the side of the head, and the head sort of opens up, which is very cool.
It sort of segments out. It breaks up into these segments.
It's very right? cool.
Yeah, it's very, it's a very, very cool
effect. Which I guess was a practical effect?
Yeah. Well, it had to have been.
Because and underneath that is a terrible looking Arnold now sculpture.
This is, we've talked a lot about some prosthetic heads, some fake Arnold heads in this movie. And we've already seen two to this point.
They looked better than this one.
This one is my least favorite. This one is an abomination.
It was just a lumpy.
This looks like that show nailed it. Somebody was like, what's my task? Make a paper mache Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Make a good bust of Arnold.
Now, I got to say, if some, like, interloper off the street made that, I'd be impressed.
But yeah,
for somebody to have thrown serious
for a movie funds, magician, yeah, that's not a great look.
It looks like if Arnold Schwarzenegger had been injured and could no longer move part of his face.
Do you think the mask, could it only say 2 weeks, or was it malfunctioning?
I think it was clearly malfunctioning.
Okay,
I think probably Quaid wanted it to say something else and it wouldn't
give the other answer. It just kept saying 2 weeks.
It couldn't. And he was like, oh shit, what do I? And I think that's probably why he was trying to like grab the mouth. He's probably trying to like tell it to say something else. Say something else.
Yes. So he takes the mask, he chucks it to the policeman. Here, catch.
The mask looks up at the cop and says, get ready for a surprise. So clearly he can say
it. And now it can talk again. It's a bummer that didn't happen. Apparently, 2 minutes ago.
It could be programmed to say something and not fuck it
up.
But
it blows up and like all hell breaks loose in there.
Richter opens fire because that's what Richter does.
I'm wondering, so was that mask inside the case? Because I can't see that mask fitting inside the suitcase.
I feel like given its collapsible ability,
it could have been.
That it could have been in there.
I mentioned in our last episode that you do see the yellow dress that she's wearing sort of poking out of the case. So that made me think the mask must be supposed to be in there.
This could be something like from Back to the Future 2 where you pop it in the microwave like a little capsule and it comes out and it's a full-grown head.
Yes, it's like dehydrated.
Yeah, it's a dehydrated head.
Absolutely.
So, and then Richter starts shooting because that's what Richter does.
He ruptures the dome.
You said it before. All hell breaks loose. Immediately, people start getting sucked out. You're afraid you're going to get sucked out.
It's the classic, like, space vacuum.
Yeah.
That happens in 50% of sci-fi space movies.
Yeah. Event Horizon.
Yeah. It's always you blow the hatch open and everything wants to get sucked out.
Right.
Yeah. It's awesome.
That
happens literally, I feel like, in every Alien movie, at least once.
That and drowning at sea are two irrational fears that I
have. Sucked out into space?
Yes.
For you, or sucked out the airplane window?
Yeah, well, sucked out into space more specifically.
Okay.
Because I know that death would not be instantaneous. If I got sucked out an airplane window, I know I'd have a little while to think about it. Oh. But I know by the time I'm going to hit the ground, I'm probably going to be like either in shock and passed out. And then when I hit the ground, I'm just going to die. I'm not going to feel it at all.
Yeah, yeah.
I've jumped out of an airplane before. Skydiving was one of the coolest things I've ever done. I'd do it again. I'd love to do it again.
Okay.
But the thought of getting sucked out of an airplane is less scary to me than drowning at sea, like in Abyss, like when Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio does the thing to like save everybody because she knows that Ed Harris is a better swimmer.
Yeah.
That scene gives me major agita. And then the thought of getting sucked into space terrifies me also.
Okay.
So there you go. There's that.
Right on. So if you ever want to torture John, just take him to space.
No, and, I want to go to space. That's the thing. Yeah. I'm just scared of getting sucked out.
So someone there triggers like the emergency doors. And
finally, after several people get sucked out.
Mainly bad guys.
Right.
Thankfully.
Obviously. It's all the tools from the Cohagen company.
But yeah, so they close the doors. But Quaid's able to escape under one just before it closes. Right. So he's sort of free. You got
this is our first alpha male exchange.
Yeah, it's like a friggin' male dominance showdown.
And this is some machismo that you don't really get in the like some two gorillas like thumping their chests at each other.
So it's Richter and the leader of like the military unit.
Yeah.
He's like saying like, open the door.
Open the goddamn door.
And he's like, they're all connected. And then there's just all like a 5 second stare down.
Oh man. You think they're going to punch. I like your idea that
I bet when they called a cut, they would just like laughed and hugged it out.
Kissed. And
yeah. I don't know. So there's anything wrong with that.
No, we love that.
So then we got Quaid. He's made his escape. He's riding like the Mars transit train.
Sweet aerial view of Mars and models again. They're way better.
Yeah.
I love practical effects. If you guys can't tell,
he's like sort of strikes up a, well, you got two people that are complaining about Cohagen raising the price of air. And then you got Quaid. He's chatting it up with a dude who couldn't look more like a construction worker or a miner.
That guy is familiar to me from a lot of like 80s stuff.
I feel like he was also recurring on Home Improvement. Like one of Tim Allen's buddies or something. Tim the Toolman Taylor's buddies.
Yes.
I feel like he was a regular on there.
On the Newhart show? I can't remember. I don't know. Anyway.
But yeah, he's like a famous character actor guy.
How much of a dick are you if you're charging people for air?
God, that's terrible.
That's where we're going. Get ready for that soon.
Kids. Yep. First water, then air. But yeah, he's explaining to him, like, I used to work in the pyramid mine. And then Quaid's asking him, like, oh, there's those rumors that they found alien stuff in those mines. And he's like, oh, that's just rumors, though. And the construction dude's like, you believe that?
The more, and yeah, lots of convenient encounters again.
The like story just unfolds for you without having to do a whole lot.
But if it sort of feels like your own, like, recall dream.
Yeah.
That way, because everybody, the things that people are saying are not like what real people would say.
Yes, it's nice that you wound up right next to this guy, isn't it?
Exactly.
But I will say this movie does a pretty good job of like rationing out the exposition.
Oh, totally.
It's like, it's in ways that you don't necessarily, it doesn't feel too clunky.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like, yeah, it's not people fucking, it's not sex position or anything like that. It's in a way that makes sense.
So then we've got what? Richter goes to see Cohagen face to face.
Yeah. We get big bad and bad number two.
And Cohagen's just furious at Richter for letting Quaid, you know, slip through his fingers again.
And gives him the silent treatment when he first comes in. Richter, do you know why I'm such a happy person? Ronnie Cox, this is his moment to chew the scene.
He's awesome in the scene.
He is just. So he explains that as long as terbinium keeps flowing, he can do whatever the fuck he wants.
And he's like saying, the one thing I can't have happen is have the rebels win. And he's like saying, your foul ups are making it happen.
Yeah.
And again, this is a scene that's written to walk the tight wire because you're not quite sure even what he's talking about.
Yeah.
But he never says what his plan is.
Right.
It's clear that Richter's disappointing him in some way.
Yeah, he's told Richter to stop thinking and just do what he's told because you are not fit to think. You're my lapdog. I'm going to hit you with his newspaper.
He tells him, like, Quaid needs to be kept alive. And Richter's like, well, someone's helping him. And he's like, I know someone's helping him.
Yeah.
But he doesn't say it's me. Like, it's our side. So it could, again, it plays both ways, right?
Yeah. And then also we hear that Quado wants what's in Quaid's head, which is a hard sentence to say. And then and that he might be able to extract it because apparently he's a psychic.
Yeah.
Which, that's cool.
Cohagen's like his smack talk, the way he like just rips Richter a new one is like super awesome. Ronnie Cox is so good at this.
No, it's amazing.
But yeah, he basically, so he says, I'm going to need you, Richter, to play along with my plan and like, don't ask any questions. Do what you're told.
Can you do it?
And yeah.
Richter says, you know,
he's like, okay.
Good. Or I'll erase your ass.
He's so good. I would like to see him try. Yeah. So then we go back to Quaid. He's arriving at the Mars Hilton as Hauser.
Product placement.
Yeah. Hauser had instructed him to do it. And he's there.
And he flashes the Brubaker badge.
He does. He flashes that Brubaker ID. I feel so bad for those Hilton workers because they are wearing the worst uniform I've ever seen.
It just looks terrible.
It just looks awful. I feel for them, but I've had a job before my life, I believe, where I had to wear clothes that I was not happy to be wearing. So I feel the pain.
Where was that?
Working at a car rental place.
Oh.
And then when I was working at Publix, it was like, okay, you got to wear the Publix polos and whatever else.
I had to wear a Walmart vest.
Ooh. Yeah. That's rough.
It was all right. It was pretty stylish.
Stylish. Do you still have it?
It's at my parents' house.
I used to still have those faded ass, Publix shirt.
I think it's in an extra closet in my parents' house next to like my graduation robe and my nice. Middle school letterman jacket.
Memories.
So yeah, the dude behind the clerk tells him, you know, welcome, Mr. Brubaker. We got your suite. Yes, right. Welcome back, Mr. Brubaker. We have your suite ready and you've got a safety deposit box.
Mm-hmm. He's like, would you like to access that now? And he's like, sure.
Well, sure. So they do some second authentication method, like touch.
They both swipe their thumbs.
And what's in the box? What's in the box?
It's like, it's the most, yeah, it's a flyer for a nightclub called The Last Resort. And it says what? Ask for Melina?
Ask for Melina. And he's curious about it. And I like this. He takes a pen and he writes Melina. And wouldn't you know it, it's
to check the handwriting, which yeah. I think I would know without having to write it if that was my handwriting or not.
Wait, has Doug written anything at this point?
We don't even know that he knows how to write.
We can't read. So
who's it may be one of those things like instinctually.
Exactly.
He's never written before.
Yeah.
Anywho.
So, yeah, Quaid's out on the quest to look for the last resort. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, I just want to say, like, once again, the clues are being sort of doled out exactly as they would be in like a cheesy, you know, choose your own adventure type scenario.
Yeah.
Anyway, just want to point that out. It'll become relevant later as we try to figure out what's really happening.
Yeah. It's all setting up for the big reveal.
Mm-hmm.
So Quaid links up with Benny, who
we meet Benny.
He's got five kids.
That's if there's one thing we know about Benny, it's that he has five kids to feed.
He's got five. I've got five kids to feed.
He says that. What do you think? 10 times, perhaps?
At least four times.
Yeah.
At least four or five.
It's usually a couple times per conversation.
Right. There's a skirmish as Quaid's getting into the cab.
Yeah, like all hell breaks loose. I mean, dudes are blowing stuff up in the middle of
Mars, man.
I know. It's like, you know what? Maybe Lori was right, and Mars is not a cool place to hang out.
Well, yeah. Again, everything is subterranean. Everything's got to be underground because you can't be on the surface. So you got nowhere to go but down. So yeah, we get some exposition from Benny here as they're driving away, trying to miss gunfire that the rebels. You know, what do the rebels want? Quaid asks him, and he says that they want more money, more freedom, and more air, which doesn't seem like a demanding list.
Freedom and air. Greedy bastards.
Greedy bastards. You got to pay for it. Assholes.
And they get to Venusville, which is like the red light district. Basically, it seems like a lot of sex shops and seedy nightclubs and
filled with mutants.
Filled with mutants. Absolutely. Benny explains where the mutations come from, that the first domes built on Mars were like cheap domes. They didn't keep the radiation out and it led to people being mutated, but also having psychic abilities.
Yeah, which is kind of awesome. But I guess you can't be anything but truthful in a society where everyone's psychic. You
can read your mind.
Yeah.
There's all these people, offering to tell Arnold or tell Doug's fortune, to read his mind or whatever, to predict his future.
Yeah, like everyone's walking up to him and say, you know, I know your sign is, I can tell
he you. He has a Tinder moment with a young mutant.
Right.
He like gives her money, which is, you know, we see that Quaid has a heart.
And then we see Benny dropping him off at the last resort and asking for money because he's got five kids to feed. Quaid gives him cash and leaves him with an impolite remark to take him to the dentist because Benny does have a mouth. He's got a grill.
That was a mean thing to say.
Yeah.
Unnecessary.
It was unnecessary. Quaid, geez.
So he goes to the bartender. He asks for Melina. Who they're like saying, well, Melina's very particular. She'll only see certain people.
Yeah, and this place is definitely seedy. It's a different kind of hive of scum and villainy.
He's like, well, I'm pretty sure she'll see me, and stuffs a wad of cash in the guy's hand.
He's like, no, you can talk to Mary. She's available.
Oh, Mary. Famous Mary.
Mary turns, I think that's what he says. And then so Mary turns around and she's like, well, I don't know about free.
She's like, do you see anything you like? Is that what the line?
I think so.
She opens her shirt up. She's got three breasts.
She's got a triple tata or a ta-ta-ta, if you will.
A tit-tit-tees.
A ta-ta-ta.
That's a very, especially as a 12-year-old boy.
Yeah.
That's a very memorable part of the movie.
I think that I ran the VHS tape back.
They were tracking lines all over that.
I think I ruined it.
You like were in there taping it back together. Oh, man.
Yeah. And so, but then we see Melina step out on the catwalk up above.
Yes.
No. I take it back. We see Melina.
She's at the table with Tony and George.
That's right. She's at a table across the room with Tony and George.
Now she walks over and just like grabs Hauser by the dick.
Right.
She just grabs it.
What have you been feeding this thing?
He says, blondes.
That's great writing.
That's hysterical. I don't know about great writing. It's hysterical.
When I say great, I mean it's very funny.
It's like, wow, they went for it.
Well, and obviously it's clear that everyone at that table knows who Quaid is.
Yes.
And it's not, and they're not necessarily glad to see him except for maybe Melina.
Yeah, it seems like both Tony, who is Dean Norris with a lot of makeup and prosthetics Dean Norris, who is Hank from Breaking Bad.
And George Marshall Bell, that you remember from a lot of 80s movies, but probably mostly as the bad guy from Twins.
I loved him in Twins.
Yes.
Anyway, that's a few Twins mentions on these Total Recall
episodes. You guys haven't seen Twins. What the hell?
Yeah, watch Twins as soon as you're finished listening to this.
That's right. Tony and George know him as Hauser. Melina knows him as Hauser. Everyone's calling him Hauser.
Tony, who's got like a facial deformity, says, "You got a lot of nerve showing your face around here." And Quaid's like, "Look who's talking."
Again, making fun of people is
brutal.
Yeah, I know.
Burn. You're going to burn the mutant.
Yeah, I mean, he's going after people's like.
You roasted him.
Yeah, I know. But those are cheap shots.
I don't like it.
And then as Melina is leading Quaid away, we see the amazing Thumbelina, who wants to also crawl all over.
I don't even know how I feel about her being called Thumbelina, but yeah, she's a dwarf, a little person.
Yeah, she's a little person.
And a prostitute. And she's cute. She's got tons of personality. And she's like, if you need any help with this one, give me a holler.
I love it. She is ready to.
She's sassy as hell.
She's ready to swing on Arnold.
Oh, my God. She's ready to climb him like a tree.
Like a tree.
Oh, that's wonderful.
But no sooner they're upstairs and alone than she decks him.
She's like, I thought you were dead. And then, of course, she's quick to forgive and they sort of make out a little bit.
She's trying to kiss him and he's like, wait, I need to talk to you.
I don't remember you. I don't know who you are.
This is another thing that if you know somebody and they come to you and they're like, listen, I'm trying to tell you something. Like, what if I came to you? You came to my house and I was like, I don't know who you are.
Yeah. You're like, okay, you don't want to believe it. It's a far-fetched thing to hear.
Yeah.
So she thinks he's pulling her leg or that he's full of shit.
Yeah.
Or whatever. He mentions, no, like I just came from Earth. My wife tried to kill me. Of course, all she hears is, what, you're married?
Yeah.
That is pretty typical. I feel like that's good writing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, again,
I love that. Yeah. That's just all she hears. What, you're married? And he's like, no, you're not hearing me. I'm not really married, but like I've been stuck in another person's identity, or like I don't know who I am.
And it was Cohagen that did it,
right?
And she is not buying him. She's not on board.
She thinks she thinks that he betrayed them and that he's still probably working
and
for Cohagen.
And that he has used her,
yes,
to get her.
I think because he just sort of disappeared on him,
right? He ghosted. Totally ghosted. But then he's like, he's begging her to help him, that people are trying to kill him, and that he has intel, apparently, to bring Cohagen down, even though he doesn't know.
Right. He's like, it's in my brain. I don't know how to get it out.
It's a very Jason Bourne thing. And she's like, get the fuck out.
Yeah.
I don't want to have anything to do.
He's like, he doesn't want to leave. And that's, she pulls a gun on it. He's like, people are trying to kill me. And she pulls a gun and sticks it to his head. And he's like, really?
Yeah. Like me too.
Yeah, exactly. It's a pretty good scene.
Yeah. So when we cut downstairs, Benny's getting the handful of ta-ta-ta.
Yeah, he's checking out the. He's wishing he had three hands. He says,
"Again, it's low hanging fruit, but it's good fruit. It's delicious fruit.
So Quaid leaves. Benny runs out after him,
right?
Because he doesn't want to, I guess, lose this like gold mine that he's found.
He doesn't want to lose that fair.
Yeah, yeah. We got Cohagen on the news saying he's declared martial law, basically that the military's going to take over.
Federal colony is on lockdown because of Quato and his terrorists.
Right. Quato is to blame for everything, of course.
Because that's the way it is.
Yep, yep.
That's just the way it is.
So Quaid gets back to his room at the Hilton. No sooner does he get there, just about, then there's a knock on the door.
Always.
Calling him Mr. Quaid?
Yeah, he calls him.
He calls him Mr. Quaid. He's here. I need to talk to you about Hauser.
That's right. I need to talk to you about Hauser. And he opens the door and he says his name is Edgemar. And
he's Dr. Edgemar from Recall.
He's the first guy we saw on the very first commercial
for
Recall.
Typically, that would be an actor.
Right.
Not a real doctor.
Instead of the guy.
But yeah, he comes in the room. He's like, hey, I'm like, you're not going to believe this, but you're not, like, we're, neither of us is in this room right now.
That should have been the name of this movie. You're not going to believe this.
He tells him, look, we're actually at Recall. You're strapped into a chair. you're suffering from a schizoid embolism.
Yeah, a delusion that you're creating in your mind.
Right. Oh, he's cool. Like saying you've sort of broken free of the narrative of your trip and you're sort of forming your own adventure now.
Which after the couple of days Quaid has, he's like, how could he not be skeptical? He's like, okay, yeah.
I mean, when Edgemar describes it, his version like feels more plausible,
right,
than that there's a crazy interplanetary conspiracy. I mean, going
it does.
On.
It does. It seems plausible
because we know that people have had these, but it also schizoid embolisms before,
right? But it also seems like, given everything that we've seen happen, because it's happened in front of our eyes, it seems like people are trying to take advantage of someone who's been under a lot of mental duress. Yeah.
So his argument basically is, everything that you've experienced is exactly what you paid for.
Right.
And Quaid's just like, oh, that's a coincidence.
Right.
That's a hell of a coincidence, I would say.
Yeah.
But it's also been what he's sort of been dreaming about even before he went to recall. So maybe it's not a coincidence at all. I don't know. We don't really know exactly. Right. But,
and then suddenly Laurie's there. There's
a knock on the door. He's like,
and he says,
go answer the door, Mr. Quaid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And who is it? But it's Laurie, which I think the first time I watched this movie, I was like, oh, Sharon Stone.
She's back.
I was like, sweet.
Nice.
And she says, of course, I'm at recall and I'm trying to help them bring you back.
Yep. Yep. And Quaid doesn't believe it. And that's when the doctor like starts giving him the bad cop treatment.
And here we go.
Where he's like, look, this is not going to end well for you. Like if you don't listen, like you're going to wind up getting lobotomized.
You're going to lose yourself forever. And here's where we get the Matrix ripoff moment number two. Like the Wachowskis maybe took something. And maybe there's another reference somewhere, or maybe it is Philip K. Dick. Maybe that's all of that was Philip K. Dick.
That could be
inspired. Was,
but he gives him basically a red pill and he's like, I need you to take this pill and the red pill will bring you back to reality, which is in the Matrix, I think, right? Like if you take the red pill, you're gonna
wake up
in the real world.
And if you take the blue pill, you'll go on living in ignorance.
So that's a big coincidence for the Wachowskis if it was not, sort of an homage or whatever you call it.
If it is an homage, it's an awesome homage. I'm all about homages to genres and to things that you love. Classical composers used to quote each other all the time. They used to do stuff like that all the time.
So Quaid, being a pretty smart dude that he is, he's like, well, if this is just a dream, I could kill you right now and you wouldn't worry about it, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, go ahead, but
double dog dare you.
He's like, if you do that to me, like in your mind, you're going to think of yourself as a murderer. Like you're going to a sort of a spiral or whatever.
You'll be traumatized.
Like you'll be trapped here forever. He's like, now this is when he makes some very, very specific predictions about what will happen if you don't take the pill, which is that you'll go on 1 minute. You'll be the savior of the rebels, the next minute you'll be Cohagen's bosom buddy and you will have visions of alien technology, all of which is exactly what you requested from recall. But back in the real world, like you'll be lobotomized.
So,
and I think that kind of wins Schwarzenegger over. Like he seems like he's ready to take the pill, right?
He's on board, I think, because all of that does sound like what in the world?
And again, for the screenwriters out there, like it's a risky move to lay out the exact plot of what the rest of the movie is going to be.
Yeah.
But it's why the story is brilliant.
But if you're the casual observer watching the thing for the first time, it's like, wow, that's okay.
Okay, that'd be weird if all that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, sure, okay. So Quaid pops that pill in his mouth.
Yep.
But then
It's got a sugar coating.
He sees a bead of sweat running down the head of Edgemar.
That's all it took.
And he's like, if this guy is nervous that I might really kill him, then this must not be a dream.
And that's literally all it took, just bang.
Yeah, he shoots him right in the head. It's a pretty gruesome kill.
Yeah, the special effects on that murder looked amazing.
Yeah.
Which is also a weird sentence to say, but it did look really, really good. Yeah, he spits that pill out.
He spits the pill out right in Edgemar's dead face.
And then we'll have to tell you what happens next time.
Oh, that's what we call a cliffhanger, kids.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
All right. Yeah, we're on the back half of the movie. Things are about to get super duper awesome.
I can't wait.
Yeah. Check us out next time.
We'll see you. We'll be back.